When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Requires new line. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Monday night is time for another episode here. A very special Plum Love Foods tonight as we're talking Best of Volume 1. We're going to play some of the hits, some of my favorite interviews tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm joined by my good friend Chef Dave. He's going to come on here so I don't talk to myself because then I feel silly. But thank you guys for all the love, all the downloads, all the likes, all the social media paying attention to. We really appreciate it. It's what makes this show so much fun, all the interaction. So thank you guys very, very much. Let's play some dramatic music.
A price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I pray you say goodbye to the good old days. They're never coming back. Watch a few
days.
I came to play to get my dues paid. I guess you had a dream, but it can't be saved.
I came to play.
About that time, it's 10 o'clock here on the East Coast, 7 o'clock on the West Coast, getting ready for fun-filled, action-packed summertime ride of your life. All right, that might be a little dramatic. Episode of Plum Love Foods, special tonight, talking a little bit of best of. I'm going to do some recap and talk about some of my favorite interviews and guests we've had on the show here and having a great time and talking to people. We're very lucky on this program that we get to talk to so many super cool people, and I hate the fact that I said super cool, but I don't know how else to put it. But the fun part about tonight was that I knew that coming on here, if I was stuck talking to myself the whole time, I would just feel completely silly. So over the past few weeks, I've become really, really good friends with the one and only Mr. Chef Dave Bortnum, a.k.a. Dave Boredom. He's a soldier in the kitchen. He's come down to help the vents. He's the off-and-on co-host here on Plum Love Foods. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Chef Dave is joining me tonight for the best of. Dave, good evening, brother. How are you?
Good, how you doing, bro?
Wow, that psilocybin mushroom shit you're on has got you in next level, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I went right there. Sorry, Dave hit me with, he's doing something. I should have asked if that could be public. I didn't ask that, but possibly, neither here nor there, nor proven or disproven, Dave is on a new therapy. How about that? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, it's fine. Dave, great show tonight, man. A lot of fun, kind of recap. But yeah, you're fine. Little recap of some of my favorite guests here on the show, man. And you check the show out pretty regularly. I know you're not an everyday listener or every Monday night, but you check it out pretty regularly. And here lately, I felt like it's been really good, man. The good guests, just some good conversation going on. But tonight, I kind of want to recap some of those guests and talk about some of the cool people we've had on the show, man, because we've had some heavy hitters on here.
Yeah, you've had a pretty good season. Definitely enjoyed it. And I do try to listen as much as I can. If I'm not on the line, I'm listening to the show for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it. And you know, you're becoming not a bad co-host yourself. You're pretty good at taking the ball and running every now and then.
I appreciate it. Working on it.
Well, you know, I think that what's interesting about this program, though, is how different some of the guests can be, man, because we've had everyone from, you know, tonight I'm going to play some audio from Tommy Sunshine, the EDM icon, the guy who made dance music what we know it today, is Tommy Sunshine. And it was fun having him on here, man, because he's such a, I don't know, he's such a nice guy, such an inspirational guy, I think. That's what's so great about him.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I'm excited to have you recap is this one, because like Taking Chances and everything is a good show for sure.
Yeah, that's what Tommy's all about too. I mean, he does run Brooklyn Fire Records in Brooklyn, and you know, he talks a lot about here about taking chances and jumping off that ledge and kind of looking, you know, giving guys the opportunity when they normally wouldn't get the opportunity. So we'll play a little Tommy Sunshine audio here from a little piece from that interview, and we'll listen to that, and then we'll come back and talk. And then Dave and I are going to tell you about something really cool we've got going on next week, which should be pretty fun, to let you guys all know the 2-hour Chef-tacular 2.0 is happening. So we're going to tell you all about that. And Dave is making his way to Boston, so it should be fun. We're looking forward. It's going to be a great night, right?
I'm really excited for it. I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, guys, you're checking out Plum Love Foods Live. Check this audio out from our good friend Tommy Sunshine. Dave, we come back. You got to pick it up, man. We need some more liveliness from you, man. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Check it out, guys. Here's Tommy Sunshine. Yeah, check it out.
Yes, and I think that, you know, since the beginning, like when we opened up shop in 2010, our motto has always been great music, zero boundaries. Yeah. And when you set something up with such a simple MO, you know, you can do whatever you want. And you know, a lot of kids send us demos. I hear, you know, remixes that people do, or I'll hear a bootleg of something, and I'll go look to see who made it, and I'll hit whoever it is and be like, you've got to make a record for Brooklyn Fire. And, awesome. You know, there's just this constant search for new and for, you know, fresh creative aspect on dance music. And I think that, you know, we're really blessed because there's just so many kids making this kind of music now. And we do get, you know, a staggering amount of submissions. But, you know, I have a guy that works with me, Vito, and the two of us go through every single thing that gets sent through that email address. And
wow.
That's another thing that's really uncommon for a lot of other record labels is, you know, they look through their inbox, and if they don't recognize the names of people, they don't even bother to listen. And
totally.
And I can tell you some of the most extraordinary things that we've ever released, and some of the longest standing friendships I have in the business came from people who blindly sent a demo with their fingers crossed, hoping that it would reach my ears, and it did. And, you know, we ended up collaborating on music together. We're friends for years, and, you know, it just continues to grow. But, I had so many people who mentored me and nurtured me in the earliest phases of my career. So I feel like doing this is just, it's part of the cycle. Like, I've got to pay it forward.
Right.
I've got to bring these kids up. And, you know, and show them the way through this crazy business and have a lot of fun doing it.
You know, that's a thing, man, and you're so right about that. You know, I do a lot of stuff in the TV world, and no one wants to help. No one wants to share contacts. No one wants to, you know, if someone says, hey, I can, you know, I know so-and-so, but, you know, I'm not going to connect you with them or whatnot. But I think that's one of the things I love the most about you, man, is that you're so willing to help people. That you'll find a young artist and listen, you know, people helped you get there, so it's like the right thing to do. It's a karma thing, you know? Just got to help them, too.
Well, I mean, more than any other time, you know, in my lifetime, you know, our moment right now is all about connecting and sharing information and moving the narrative into as positive of a direction as we possibly can. So, you know, any kind of networking, you know, on a social or professional or spiritual level is greatly appreciated right now.
Yeah, more talking amongst people is a good thing. That's what we need. We need more and more talking. So one of the things, dude, that we didn't touch on the last time you and I talked, and we should, I mean, you were part of one of the biggest video games in the world. Like there was a time when Dance Dance Revolution was like, that was it. That was the bee's knees. That shit blew Beanie Babies out of the water. That was the main jam, and you were a big part of that, dude.
I mean, I've got six different songs scattered throughout different releases of the game, but original music, no less. Like that's the craziest part of it is that I wrote like original songs for that game that don't exist outside of the platform. And if I go online and look up some of the names of the songs, I literally could watch for there's days worth of people playing the game to my music. Which is the craziest thing to me. It's so incredible. It's like, here's someone in Seoul, Korea. Here's someone in South Africa. Here's someone in Alaska. And it's like all these people like playing like intensely competitively to my original music. And it's mind-blowing.
Dude, and how does that work? So they contact you and want you to do music for it and – are you like are familiar with it, or are you like, what are you even talking about? You want me to do what? Like, how does that conversation go?
Well, I mean, I am not a gamer by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the last video game system I bought was a ColecoVision in the 80s. So like it came to a screeching halt at like Punch-Out on ColecoVision for me. That was my the end of it for me. But like, there was a guy who was the kind of head of A&R for the music side of Konami, which is the company that makes Dance Dance Revolution. And one day, out of nowhere, I got an email from this guy at Konami, and he was like, I really love your music. And believe it or not, it was a remix of a rock song that brought him to me in the first place. I did a remix of a band called... what were they called now? It was on the Snakes on a Plane soundtrack. And it was the Hush sound. The Hush sound, Wine Red, with this song. And these guys were like kind of in the same, they ran the same circles as like Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco. So they were the band Hush Sound, and they had a song called Wine Red. And I remixed it for the Snakes on a Plane soundtrack. And that ended up in his world, and he heard it and loved it, and they had licensed it for one of the editions of Dance Dance Revolution. And then he was like, would you be interested in making some original music for the game? And I was like, absolutely. And wrote like a crazy song called Downtown, which my wife sings on, and she's no singer. So like, we were able to like auto-tune her voice and turn her into like, what sounded like, you know, a Walt Disney character singing this like kind of punk rock like dance song. And it's just so funny because literally it's hours and hours of people playing the game to these songs on YouTube. And it's so cool because it's like, it's younger people, it's older people, it's, you know, it's everywhere across the entire globe.
Man, you know, I think that's the cool part when you hear someone like Tommy Sunshine talk about just, and we're back live, by the way, about taking chances like that, Dave. You heard, I mean, Tommy, his big break, like, you know, mainstream type break came from the video game Dance Dance Revolution. Like, you just never know where it's going to come from, do you?
No. I like that story, how it went from Snakes on a Plane to Dance Dance Revolution, like, all over the world.
Fuck yeah.
It's kind of cool.
You just think about Tommy, man. Tommy's one of the coolest guys you'll ever meet. He's, you know, he's got long, he's not what you expect for a dance musician guy. Like, he's an older guy, not super old, but he's an older guy, you know, probably my age or so, maybe a little bit more older than me, but crazy ass long hair and just completely sober, doesn't do anything. I mean, trust me, he's done his time. He's put a few back in the past, but, you know, and we talk about that in the interview, and you can check that out. It's in the podcast. You want to hear the whole interview with Tommy, but, you hear a guy like that, and he talks about just taking chances, and I think that's so important in our business, man, and not enough people do it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, taking chances is probably what will get you the furthest, honestly. Go as far out as your comfort zone as you can, and then you'll be amazed at where you're at the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. You know a little something about that, don't you?
Yeah, well, definitely. Working on it for sure.
It's funny because you think about, especially in a kitchen, the music that we listen to. I mean, it's so diverse, and it just, you know, I worked in a kitchen where whoever got there, the chef's gimmick was whoever got there first could pick the music for the day. And so it really kind of gave everybody the incentive to come in first, because if you got there at the wrong time, man, you may be stuck listening to God knows what. But it's funny, though, because when that does happen, I think that's how I became a fan of certain dance music. Because, I mean, listen, I know a lot of us are old school punks and things like that that are kind of in this business, or old school hip hop. I think old school punk and old school hip hop, I think, go hand in hand. I'm not sure how you feel about that, Dave, but I think they kind of go, it's kind of one and the same. I mean, I think there's not too much of a difference from, you know, you look at some old, like, NOFX compared to, like, 36 Chambers from Wu-Tang. I mean, while the music's very, very different, the message isn't that different. What do you think?
I think you pretty much hit it right on the head right there, because if you go back to, like, early 80s, the punk scene and early hip-hop scene, they actually came together, and you had punk kids at hip-hop shows and hip-hop kids at punk shows, so they
totally
worked out.
Well, you know, I think especially being in kitchens, like, having, you know, just spanning the globe from Slayer to, you know, a bunch of my good buddies here in New York were at a Slayer show recently, and, you know, but you go down the kitchen sometimes and it's Slayer or it's hardcore or it's death metal or it's fucking EDM music and dance music. And, you know, our good friend Kevin Levine down there, Chef Scatori's, he's rocking dance music all the time. I wish he would stop dancing on Instagram, because that's embarrassing for everybody. But I do like the fact that he does have it on. And Tommy is the godfather of it, man. He is the godfather of EDM music. He is the man, no doubt about it. And super sweetheart of a guy, too. That's the thing. When you meet somebody like him who is just – and he's been with everybody. That dude's hung out with Pearl Jam. He hung out with Kurt Cobain before Kurt Cobain died. The stories he was telling, man, I mean, God, it's unbelievable. Do me a favor, you guys. If you go on Instagram and send Tommy a message, just at Tommy Sunshine, T-O-M-M-I-E Sunshine, on Instagram, and tell him you heard him on the show and that you dug it and you liked it, because he's a very, very interactive guy, super cool, and I can't emphasize enough how much he's one of my favorite guys to talk to. I got to get him back on the show, I think. Maybe on the new show that we're going to do on Station Head, I'll have Tommy come on. Maybe I'll have Tommy be the in-house DJ. How dope would that be?
That'd be pretty sweet.
I don't think he ever would do it. Actually, he's cool enough. He just might do it. He's that fucking cool. He just might do it. I don't know. Yeah, definitely one of my favorite interviews, though. I think that interview with Tommy on that episode went probably a half an hour longer than it was supposed to. But we just get into it, man. We start talking, and he's a very, like, the guy speaks from his heart, speaks knowledge. And, you know, I think when you start talking from your heart and talking from your heart and music, it goes hand in hand with food, Dave. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I mean, music and food, I mean, come from the heart. So it's definitely something you got to pull it from.
No doubt about it, man. So check that episode out. That's at Tommy Sunshine on Instagram. And, of course, you can find the episode on iTunes. Just type in Chef Plum and Tommy Sunshine. It comes right up. Great episode. You can't miss it. Dave, next week, switching gears a little bit here. We, myself, and you're coming down to Sous Chef for me, are going to be in Boston with our good buddy Chef Nick Calais for Rooftop Chefs, a charity event happening in Boston at the Hotel Colonnade. You and I are going to be there. We are the first... I guess the first act. We're the opening match for the series this summer, man. It's going to be a fuckload of fun, man. I'm looking forward to it. It's for a great charity.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'm excited. Honestly, I can't wait to get out there and do the damn thing. It's another awesome event that I'm thankful you asked me to come along and help you out on.
Well, you killed it the last time, man. I'm looking forward to having you around closer so you can help you out with more stuff, because you are good. But I'm not going to kiss your ass here and tell you how good you are, because you don't need me to, but it will be a fun event. But the funnest part about the whole thing is we're going to do 100 people, all for charity, happening next. It's the 12th, right? I think it's 12th is the actual date of the event. Tuesday the 12th. We're going to be there with Chef Nick on the rooftop. It's 100 people. I think tickets are already almost sold out, but he's got some stuff there, some baseball stuff, because all his baseball connections there to the Red Sox. Should be a great night. But to top the whole night off, we're going to finish the event. And then myself, you, and of course, Chef Nick, and there's going to be a cavalcade of guests joining us for the Cheftacular 2.0 Series 6, Episode 1 kickoff for Plum Love Foods Live. I'm really excited about it, man. I'm happy you're going to be around for it, and some great guests. And we're going to be on a roof in Boston in summer. How dope is that? Oh, by the way, there's a pool. So just throwing that out there.
Oh, no. Hopefully one of us doesn't end up in the pool.
Yeah, I hope not. But That's next weekend. You got to make sure you check that out. If you're in the Boston area, give us a shout. Let us know. Come see us. You'll start. I'll Instagram it and put it all out there in the coming days here. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun, man. We're doing a really cool dish. We're going to do a take on tuna carpaccio, which should be a lot of fun, with compressed watermelon and a mango yolk. I'm doing air quotes for yolk, Dave. Yolk. So it should be pretty fun. It's going to be a dope dish, man. I'm looking to really, when you do events like that, Dave, I think you really have to show off. You have to really try to do something that's kind of striking to the customers or to the guests when they come to an event like that. Wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah. Something different. Something that's not exactly the norm always catches people.
Yeah. It's definitely what you want to do with that. You don't want to be some lame, boring, I made a slider. Did you? Did you?
No, not at all. Don't want to do it.
No, man, that's not what we're doing. So, Dave, we were talking a minute ago about music and punks and hip-hop and things like that, but I think the generation of cooks that I think you fall in, you're not, by the numbers, you're not in my generation of cooks, but I think by the mentality you are. And one of the guests we had on this season, Chef Tyler Anderson, James Beard Award nominee for Best Chef in New England for many, many years, running straight in a row. He was on Top Chef season 15. That was this past season. He's got two restaurants here in Connecticut. He's got The Cook and the Bear, which is his take on barbecue food. He's opening a brand new place as well to take on, I feel terrible, I don't know now. I'll have him come back. But, and of course, his restaurant, the award-winning Millwrights, which is the take on New England food, which is just phenomenal. Tyler Anderson was on the program. Dave, did you hear that episode or do you remember it? It was a while ago.
Yeah, actually, you called in and talked to him for a second, I believe.
You did, that's right, because he was talking about some stuff in Detroit, right?
Yeah, he was talking about how it's starting to take off and it's really business ready, and then we had a conversation on that. So
and then
I asked him about Beard House, and I'm leaving. I'm like, yeah, Detroit's blowing up. I'm out. Bye.
Right? But no, I mean, that's the thing about Tyler, man. He's one of those guys. He's super cool. And if you were there, he would call you, and he would hang with you, and he would talk to you, and he would be there and help you out. And he's just one of those guys. As a matter of fact, he posts on Instagram. You can follow him on Instagram, PotsandPan77. Shoot him a message. Let him know you dig it. A picture of Detroit. I'm not sure what he's thinking about doing over there. But, you know, he's a Hartford guy in Connecticut here, New England guy, doing a great job. His restaurants are freaking just killing it. And, you know, it's delicious food. That's the thing. You got a guy like this who is an award-winning chef, a phenomenal chef, but he's just, He's doing amazing. And his restaurant, the new one, it's actually in the Goodwin Hotel. It's called Pour on a Pina, which is a tapas style restaurant. They have a wine room, a ham bar. How dope is that? And they have a donut shop with them too, which is, you know, it's a cocktail bar by night. So he's gone in and he's taken over this hotel. You got to make sure you check that out too. That's Pour on a Pina. That's P-O-O-R-R-O-N-N-P-I-N-A. I'm probably saying it wrong and butchering it, but it's a fantastic place. You got to check it out. Brand new spot for him. Fresh off of Top Chef season 15. Here's our friend Tyler Anderson talking a whole lot about just being a cook and kind of like coming from the business. And then we switch the gears and talk about how television's helped, Dave. So let's see what he says. Hopefully, maybe you'll, when we come back, you'll be a little bit, you know, more active, you know, maybe funnier. Can you be more funny? I don't know. I'm kidding, dude. Check it out. Here's Tyler Anderson talking about it. Yeah, here's Tyler talking all about coming from being punks and cooks nowadays versus the new school versus old school, and of course, how television's helped his restaurants.
When I was coming up, when we were coming up, it wasn't there weren't the opportunities that there are today, to say the very least. You know, I worked most of the lines I worked with, you know, I was the only non-convicted felon. You know, that was working the lines. It's not the same anymore.
No, it's definitely not, man. And you're right. I remember that. I had a guy that was very inspiring to me. He had just done a stint in a jail or penitentiary or whatever you call it in Virginia. And we worked the line at this restaurant together. And his name was Doc, and he had two gold teeth. And, Chef, he told me the best piece of advice I ever got in my life. And I'm going to tell it to you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "What's Plum, that? Yeah. They can't all be good."
Great.
But you're, I mean, I but you're right, man. Like,
yeah, we have like all that. We all have like that kind of person who shaped us, you know, in this career. And, you know, they shaped us, different people have shaped us in different ways. But I have, you know, the felon grill cook named Humberto, who I like, you know, I was 17 working in this kitchen called The Hungry Hunter, this restaurant called The Hungry Hunter. And this dude, like, was the grill cook, and I was just in awe because he worked the grill all night long just with bare hands. You know, like, nice. Just the dude was a monster. And, you know, to be like Umberto one day is still my goal.
To be Umberto. Dude, that should be a shirt for you. You should make out a shirt for, like, Cooking the Bear or something. Just be Umberto.
Be Umberto. Don't be. Can I say bad words on this show or no?
Fuck yeah. Say whatever you want.
Okay. Yeah, don't be a pussy. Be like Umberto, you know?
That's great, dude. I love that. That should be a hashtag or something. I don't know. What a great story, man. But so did you know, though, for you, was it always something that you were like, you know what, this is a career I want to be in? Or was it, you know, at first, is it, yeah, you know, it pays the rent, you know, meeting cool people, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, at first, exactly. You know, waitresses, cute waitresses, and then it was cute pastry girls. And then, you know, you don't have to set an alarm to get up for work. You know, it just kind of like, I just did it. And then one day, like my turning point in life was into 1999, I had dinner at the French Laundry and Thomas Keller was in the kitchen and I ate that meal and I had the dish Oysters and Pearls and I had that dish and I realized what could be done through food. And from that point on, I decided to take it extremely seriously.
Now, did you go to school or anything, or were you just kind of working in restaurants, kind of taught that way?
I went to school, but like while I was in school, I was actually working at Charlie Trotter's. So it was like, you know, what I was doing at work was far more of a learning experience than what I was doing in school. So I still have to do. I actually still have to do my internship, and then I graduate. So if anybody's looking for a real good intern, I'm looking for an internship. But it's not my culinary school.
That's great. you know, man, I think culinary school is a bad name. I do. I think that it's getting a bad name now because these kids who graduate, they want to call themselves, call themselves chef immediately when they graduate school. But I think you get out of it what you put into it. I mean, if you go in there with the right mindset, you can learn a lot. You know, when I went to school, I went to CIA. When I went, it was desperately needed. I needed that direction. I needed that, you know, that I don't know. Like, I just needed some direction in my life, and it made a giant difference in me. I had hair down to my waist, and they made me cut it. Like, it was crazy. I couldn't believe it.
And that's all. I mean, the CIA is awesome for stuff like that. And, you know, it's like different strokes for different folks. I'm not completely anti-culinary school by any stretch, but, you know, I've just seen so many kids get ripped off. Not so much at like the Johnson & Wales and the CIAs of the world, but some other schools, which, you know, some of them are out of business now, but it just sucks to see like a kid who wants to grow up to be a cook graduate with, you know, $75,000 in debt and I got to hire him for $11 an hour. You know, that's real shitty math. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the tough part. And I think it's a harsh reality for a lot of these kids too, man, when they come out of school and you know, you tell them, listen, I can hire you and I can pay you 15 bucks an hour or whatever, or 12 bucks an hour. And, you know, and you're going to work your ass off and it's not really going to be fun. And, you know, you come from a culinary school where you were the top of the food chain and you're going to come back here and guess what? You're going to work pantry and shut the fuck up, come to work. You know,
it can be you know, I definitely encourage people if they are going to go to school. Like I said, I'm not anti-culinary school completely, but if you're going to go to school, work in restaurants first and then go to school. Because I think that a lot of people can just learn enough in the restaurants. But you're right, culinary school teaches you this level of discipline, especially a school like as good as the CIA. So if you're going to go to a good one.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. No doubt about it. Do you find a lot of guys that are coming to work for you at the restaurants? Do they have degrees? Have they been to culinary schools? Or are they just kind of, you know, I'm not trying to gauge anybody one against the other. Just kind of curious as to how these guys are coming into the world now.
Honestly, like I've been about half and half.
Yeah,
I get a lot. You know, I get a lot. I'm half and half, I guess. You know, that's kind of the end of the story. We get a decent amount who have worked in good restaurants before and know what the fuck they're doing. And then we get, like right now we have a couple kids from the CIA who are pretty green, but I kind of like them like that. And, you know, they're hustlers and they get it. It's all, like you said, it's all about what you put into it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear, actually. It's funny how we have some people on here who just, they're just not big fans of school and stuff. And I get that, you know. And
It's the way it goes, I guess. Dude, your restaurants. I have not had the opportunity to eat at Millwright's yet. I'm hoping to change that this year. It's on my list. I wrote down 10 things that's on my list this year.
Nice. Well, we've only been open almost 6 years now, so I, you know, don't worry.
But there's quite a difference in the two. Cooking the Bear, you know, cool barbecue flair, you know, barbecue with like a nice chef flair, just amazing food, nice Tom Selleck thing going on there. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But then Millwright's is, you know, that it's very like hot cuisine, just nice, fun, good food. You know, and one of your comments you made in Top Chef, which I just love, and it's kind of become like the mantra, you know, when people say farm to table, you're like, all fucking food comes from a farm. I love that, dude.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. How would you describe the two restaurants, the difference in the two?
I mean, you just did a pretty good job of it. But so kind of my whole life I've been doing, quote unquote, fine dining cuisine, working in more upscale restaurants, and Millwright's, you know, as my baby and my first restaurant, it certainly fits that bill. But, yeah. You know, the words farm to table are great as a description for some restaurants. And I think we are actually, but it's like, it just gets bastardized. All food comes from a farm. All food is eaten on a table for the most part. So it's like a stupid term. We like to work really hand in hand with farmers, like as far as how, you know, we crop plan for the next year, you know, we're at the farms, we're picking the stuff out of the ground. We're doing a lot of that. And we really only cook seasonally. And we really primarily only use products that you could have purchased in New England in the early 1900s. So you won't see like blatant use of pineapple or mango or, you know, avocado on our menu. We do use things like lemons, limes, you know, a little soy sauce here and there, stuff like that. But we try to stay pretty true to like New England roots because the building was built in 1680 and we kind of want to like stay with that. And then downstairs we have a tavern. Which is cool. You know, it's a little more casual. You get like a burger down there, roast chicken, whatever. But Cooking the Bear, the opportunity came up to like partner with Jamie McDonald, who is a great barbecue guy. I've wanted to do barbecue for a long time. I really wanted to do a casual restaurant just kind of to see what it was like.
right.
And so here we are.
Man, that's just it's a great mix, and you're killing. I mean, Cooking the Bear, the food's just great. I mean, we did an episode of Road Trip there, and it's just it's the food's awesome. I couldn't
really fun.
I can't think of another way to say it. Yeah, and it seems like it's a lot of fun.
It's stoner food, you know, like it's fun to cook. It's fun to eat. Like you know, even if you're not somebody who imbibes, it's still like it's rich. It's satisfying. It's fatty and acidic, and you know, we just try to hit those big flavor profiles. Have fun with smoking things, you know, and that's what it is.
Now, do you find yourself spending more time at one than the other right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more involved in Millwright's. Like, Millwright's is my baby. It always will be. And, you know, like, Millwright's is an ever-changing menu. It needs my hands a little more, I guess. I just like to be there a little more. I love being at Cooking the Bear too, but like I have Ed Jones over there who's the chef and he's like running things over there. Like, and those guys do a great job. And that's like my Millwright's guys like throw down too, but it's Millwright's is more where I want to be more often. Like I love cooking over at Cooking the Bear. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I'm talking about two different women right now and I don't want to like say the wrong thing.
You're very PC. You really are. You're doing a really good job, dude.
Like it's a like conversation with a Mormon dude, you know, like, like Cooking the Bear is my Tuesday night girl and Millwright's is my Monday. You know,
nice.
Whatever. But more at Millwright's. Nice. More at Millwright's.
Nice, man. Well, I mean, what's the plan here? Are we thinking a third restaurant here in the next, in the future or?
We have something that's brewing. It's wild. Like, you know, honestly, the landscape of restaurants these days, like is not like a wonderful one. I think we have a little oversaturation and tons of new restaurants have been opening. And, you know, my thought isn't to like push to open a new restaurant right away, especially because, you know, I took 5 years between Millwright's and opening the Cooking the Bear, and the Cooking the Bear is only what, like 7 months old now or something. But I'm an idiot. You know, and there's an idea in my head that may be coming around soon.
Well, creative people, man, and that's what we do. We just, you want to keep creating and sometimes the Monday night girl and the Tuesday night girl are great, but you want a Friday night girl. my wife doesn't hear that.
Yeah. And by girls, we mean restaurants. Yeah.
Right. Right. It's not a literal thing, or maybe it is. But, you know, it's funny, though, because when you look at the stuff you've done, and I know the things that I've done, you know, in the TV world, the Food Network world, things like that. It affected my business personally tremendously. For those of you who don't know, I don't know how you did unless you're living under a rock. Of course, Chef is on Top Chef right now, and I'll let you talk about where that is. I'm not going to say anything. But have you seen how that's affected the restaurants at all? Have you seen like an uptick in business?
Yeah, I mean, like, even from when I was back on Chopped in like 2009, I think I was back in Chopped on Chopped. Like, the TV stuff really does help. And, you know, we, like, as chefs, we just decide to go different ways. There's so many ways we can go within this business. And I think, you know, TV can be kind of lame, but also TV is good to, like, push us forward and really help to me and, you know, I think to you as well, like, to really get us to a point where we're able to be somewhat successful doing whatever segment of this business is that we love to do. And so, you know, I think it's been really like every TV appearance is really great, but like, I've never seen anything like what this Top Chef shit has done.
You know, I mean, that's some serious knowledge there from a very, very, very successful guy. I mean, in Chef Tyler there talking about coming from being punk rock to opening a restaurant to using television and using it the right way. I mean, if you're going to do TV, then make it work for you. Don't let it work for you. Don't wait for it to work for you. You make it work for you, which is what he's getting at with that stuff, man. And just hearing some of those stories, I mean, honestly, Dave, how dope is it to hear a guy like that talk about that stuff?
It's pretty awesome, actually, because it's relatable. Definitely the whole, like, not having to set an alarm to go to work because you don't have to be at work till like 3 o'clock in the afternoon anyway. And showing that, like, you know, where he's come from, and then now he's put in the work for so long, it's paying off. It's a pretty dope story.
It is, man. I got to have him back on here, and I hope when you get down here, man, I hope to introduce you to Tyler, because he's a great guy, and he's just an inspirational guy. And I found what he said about culinary school to be very interesting, about how, you know, a lot of these guys go to school, and they come out of school, and they're excited, and they're full of piss and vinegar and ready to go, and they're like, oh, P.S., you're on pantry making $11 an hour. Sorry about your $75,000 you have in debt now, but welcome to the real world. I mean, that's what it is, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and then that still happens now. Like, I was a super for the place I'm at now, and then my first, like, 2 months, they're like, you're on pantry. I'm like, oh, shit, that's right, this happens.
I'm like, all right. That's all it is. That's all it is. Yeah. I mean, it's you have to, you know, what is it? Sink before you swim, I guess. And, you know, he's right about that. And I just totally killed a fly. That was gross.
Oh my God.
I'm going to drop in my candle now to be in the wax, and he's done. It just popped. Okay. Sorry. That was gross. Anyway, listen. So, but you hear a guy, I know it landed on my arm, and I totally Mr. Miyagi'd it with chopsticks. Anyway, you hear a guy like that talk about that, though, and you see that, you know, listen, I mean, he comes from the same background that the rest of us do. And this guy has been, you know, nominated for Best Chef by the James Beard Foundation in the Northeast for like 4 years in a row. He's won awards. He's been on Top Chef. He has 3 restaurants now. I mean, I think even 4 if you count the donut shop. But he's crushing it. He's doing an amazing job. Oh, and P.S., he started like we did. You heard the stories. Umberto. I still got to make that shirt. You know, be a man, be Umberto. And I'm going to make that for him and give it to him. He'll fucking die laughing if I give him that. But you hear stories like that, and he's just like the rest of us. But you know what it is, Dave? It's having that ambition, having that drive that I think a lot of – that's a good word. It's cooks either have the drive or they don't have the drive. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean – you can go to school all you want, but it's not going to make you actually get out there and do the work.
And a guy like that, he has the drive. That's what it is, man. He has the drive. And I think that's what it is when you look at all this stuff, man, is having that drive. And you hear a guy like that who's so many accolades, and you hang out with the guy, he's just a fucking douchebag like the rest of us. Like, he's tattooed and he drinks beer and bourbon and likes to hang out. He's got a kid and he's running his life. And, you know, like me, all weekend, I was told I couldn't work this weekend, Dave. I couldn't work. That's what my wife said. You know what? You cannot work this weekend. And Saturdays are my money days. You know that. You've been a part of those, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, you can't work. I'm like, why? And she's like, you know, well, my father-in-law turned 70. My twins turned 11. And my youngest had a dance recital all weekend. So I didn't work, so to speak. I just had to work for free. That's what I did. So I made like a giant dinner for my father-in-law. You know, it's just, but we're all the same. Like, that's, people do that. Like, in our business, that's the shit you have to do. We're all the same. Even though you meet somebody or talk to somebody with all these accolades and all these, you know, recognitions and amazing things they're doing in their life, dude, we're all the same. That's all it is, man. Like, it's just somebody who had a different path than the rest of us. That's all it is.
That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty much the pace you go is where you're going to get, and he's been rocking it for sure.
Yeah, and so make sure if you get a chance, follow at Pots and Pans. That's my man, Tyler Anderson. Make sure you follow him at Pots and Pans on Instagram. Tell him you heard him on the show, and you dug it, and he's an inspirational guy. He's a sweetheart of a guy, too. That's the thing. When you meet a guy like that who's so successful and so dope, and nothing pisses me off more than when they're, like, really nice and they're cool. I get so fucking angry about that. I do. I'm like, could you be a little bit of a dick for me?
Just be a douche.
Just a little bit. Not even a lot. Just a little bit. Just be a little bit of a douche. Honestly, like, I wish that myself, sometimes when I meet people, they're like, oh, I love the show, or I love the, this XYZ that you're doing, or that, you know, they're saying what's up to me about things. And, you know, I'm super nice to them back, and I try really hard to be nice. If they want a picture, we'll take a picture. I'm not trying to sound like a douche, but I'm just saying, you've witnessed, you've been there for it. I try to be cool about it. Sometimes I think, you know what? I should be a real fucking dick bag just so they realize I'm a chef. That's what. Someone's like, hey, can I get a picture? I'm like, no, go fuck yourself. I'm going to do that in Boston next week. That's my plan. I'm just going to really chef it up. No, I shouldn't do that.
Nah. I mean, fuck it. Do what you want, but, like, you know.
Jesus. Well, so make sure you follow him at Pots and Pans 78, Tyler Anderson. Great chef, man. Phenomenal chef. Great food. Looking forward to taking my man Dave when he moves down here to one of Tyler's places, because he's got several of them these days and doing well. You know, it's funny, man, because you think about – Dave, let me ask you this. I want you to name, if you were thinking, like, biggest name recognition for chefs in this country – right, and you could name three. Who would it be? Like, the three chefs in this country with the biggest name recognition. I'm not saying best chefs. I'm not saying any of that. Just a name that's like a household name that everybody knows.
Oh, household. Okay, that's tricky. It would be a lot of, like, TV-type chefs, then, obviously.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, if you're watching The Chew, you'd probably say, like, Michael Simon, and then there's Guy Fieri.
Bigger.
And Anthony Bourdain.
There you go. Right. Okay, perfect. So you said Michael Simon, Guy Fieri, Anthony Bourdain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and our man Dimitri just chimed in and said Keller, Bold, and Emerald, right? At least. And listen, those are all great names. But none, no doubt about it, Guy Fieri, his name is one of the biggest names in our country when it comes to chefs. Regardless of what you think about the dude. I mean, honestly, regardless, because he gets a bad name, dude. He does. And I'm telling you, as someone who's hung out with him, who's cooked with him and been around him from a culinary standpoint, he's no joke. The dude can cook. The dude can cook. He can run a business. He knows what's up. Guy Fieri happened to win Food Network Star, right? I'm not sure if you knew that, Dave. That's where he came from. And, I mean, they thought they had lightning in a bottle when they found Guy Fieri, which they did. And that's the truth. And you look, because his career is a testament to that. You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to do Guy's Grocery Game Season 1, Episode 2, and win. Spent some time with Guy then. I had some of his friends. We have mutual friends. And then to top it all off, I was lucky enough to have Guy Fieri on this very program, which not many people can say, you know? I mean, Dave, who else can say that on their fucking radio show podcast that's due from their bar when they drink canned wine?
I don't know anybody who can say that.
That's right. But I had Guy on here, and a little behind the scenes for this story is that, so Guy's got the I guess the introduction, the help to try to make it happen was my friends over at Ergo Chef, which we're going to do a giveaway with those guys this week, by the way. Stay tuned to social media. We're going to do a giveaway for Ergo Chef. Dave can speak to Ergo Chef. They're badass, are they not?
Yeah, I love their products. Knives are sharp as hell. Hey.
Fuck yeah.
So Guy, his PR group said we could have him for about 15 minutes or so. But the fun part was that Guy Fieri spent about an hour talking to us from everything from the business to hiring to how much culinary school is affecting the culinary world today. So check out this audio right here from Guy Fieri. It's pretty dope.
You are an incredibly busy human being. And on this show, we talk really real chef talk here, man. How do you balance everything you do and owning restaurants? How do you pull all that together? Because I can't, I mean, even just to even breathe, you've got to almost schedule it.
All right, see you, Delphine. Well, I'll tell you what it is. You surround yourself with great people. I mean, that's the most important thing. And you, it just as we multitask in the kitchen, you have to be, matter of fact, multitasking is probably what has done the most for me, besides having great people. I mean, that first and foremost, having great people, having a great wife, having a great family, having great buddies, having great, you know, team members, you know, that work inside a knuckle sandwich. But for me personally, it's just multitasking. So while I've been speaking to you, I've fed my dogs and I'm making ramen for the family. So I'm making a big ramen right now. So I'm skimming as we're talking. So, I mean, and that's the thing, but that makes me more comfortable. When I'm in here doing stuff, that makes me that I can do things, you know, that I can work and talk. If I just try to sit there and think about something, it doesn't work. So I think that's it. I think that as chefs, what we do great is we multitask. You got to be running a lot of things in a kitchen at one time to make it happen. Yeah. And that happens to be something I do really well. I don't sit down very good.
Well, it sounds like you definitely are a multitasker. For what it's worth, chef, I'm a multitasker too. I just finished my first glass of wine for the evening. So I'm multitasking as well.
Sounds like you guys have had more than that, but that's good.
I just got home from work, brother. Just one so far, but trust me, the night's still young.
Just one, officer. I promise you, just one box of wine, just one little bit.
I could do the alphabet backwards. I can do it. Just give me a second. I'll figure it out. Hey, let me ask you this, man. So,
go ahead.
In this world, it's amazing. I do a lot of private chef work and for some clientele and whatnot that are of the higher end variety, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. It's interesting how often I get asked about my social media following, man. Are you seeing that becoming a thing even in the restaurants, like even in your restaurants? Are you seeing that like kind of become more of a thing where we want to post pictures, we want to talk more about it, almost more as a marketing tool?
Well, you're talking about from the guest perspective or from our business perspective?
Business perspective, I mean, chef perspective.
Oh, from both of them. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's to me... I just was shooting a food truck out in Maui, this phenomenal place called Maui Fresh Streetery is what it was called.
Nice.
I couldn't tell you, told you a place that we haven't even heard yet, but it was this outstanding place. And I said to the guy, you know, how you advertising, how you marketing, how do you keep up with it? And he says, man, it's all social media. That's all we're doing. He says, we're not in the same place, you know, in the same day. So we're moving around, and I said, "Well, you know, how do people keep up?" And that's pretty much the going common theme with folks in the food truck business. But I think even the restaurants are starting to catch on to it. That it's, you know, sending out the pictures, sending out the guest comments, having guests, you know, send their social media out about what they're seeing and doing. But yeah, I'll tell you something. It's a hell of a lot cheaper in advertising than it was back in the day with print advertising and radio advertising and, you know, in TV advertising that we all had to go through and battle through in the 80s and 90s. I mean, this social media thing makes it, you know, but you can live and die by it. You know, there's a lot of people that are, you know, getting beat up on sites about it as well. But for the overall, I think it's a positive.
Man, I think you're so right about that, because it's just social media is just the way the world is going with everything these days. And it just seems like even in our business, social media is just playing such an integral part in it, especially even with doing TV things. It's just such a big part of doing the entire the whole scenario. It's just, it all kind of comes together, especially with things like Instagram and Facebook and whatnot. Man, I couldn't agree more. It's crazy, but it is nuts when a private client asks you what your social media following is, don't you think, chef? That's a little bit crazy.
I think people are tuned in. I think they start to recognize popularity through numbers. even though there's some shenanigans behind all the numbers sometimes. But you know, for the most part, I think that everybody started to dial into it.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're totally right about that, man. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. I don't know. It blew me away. I've been doing private clients for a long time. It just blew me away when someone asked me that. I'm like, that's a serious question. Like, really? And I mean, it's funny. I mean, everybody, even our guys from industry here are chiming in saying it's all about social media networks. And that's what it comes down to. That's exactly what it comes down to, man. So, Chef, from a culinary standpoint, what do you think is the most important skill, especially for a young chef to learn or someone young coming up in the business? What do you think is like the most important thing that they can learn?
I don't know. I think taste. I mean, I think just having the understanding of what things taste like, you know, having just having a portfolio of flavors and understanding how things work together. I mean, I taste so many dishes, you know, worldwide. And I really think that a tremendous amount of them are improperly seasoned or poorly seasoned. And I'm not just saying salt. I'm just saying looking at what's available and how things can, you know, too much of something, too little of something. So I think having that balance, I think having that ability to taste food and to be able to prescribe what, I mean, that just takes time. It just takes time to understand it and to trust yourself and to know how flavors grow and how flavors compound each other. And you know, I think all of those components come. Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, if I were going to tell somebody right now, they said, hey, I want to be a chef, what do I do? I'd say pick up that knife and start, you know, make that your tennis racket, make that your golf club, make that your an extension of yourself. You know, knife skills are tremendously, tremendously important. And again, sounds like we're doing the Ergo Chef knife commercial, but I think that knife skills... What slows you down in the kitchen is not being able to do your mise en place correctly. What creates inconsistency in dishes, knife skills, butchering skills, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, overall, what's my real big dream of, you know, would be my best recommendation is just continue to build that skill and knowledge of flavor. But in a quick, immediate, I want to get started tonight, get your knife skills tight.
Right. Right, which is, it's amazing. And you're right, because I think knife skills are really important. I'm actually doing a cooking class with our friends over there, Mike and Scott at Ergo Chef, talking about knife skills, Chef. That's what we're all talking about. I'm going to teach the world how to brunoise, Chef. Yeah. That's the plan.
That's it. You know what? And a sharp knife is the key ingredient to getting that done. And, you know, it's not just a knife that's sharp out of the box. Most of them are sharp out of the box, as they should be. But it's the knife that will hold its edge. And, you know, that's what, and again, here goes the Ergo. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen, the Ergo Chef commercial starting now. But that's the reason, I mean, honestly, that's the reason I called in. I love these guys. I love what they do. I love this entrepreneurship, this, you know, these brothers coming together, making stuff happen and working hard. I mean, these guys are in touch with their equipment every day. And they, I mean, I remember when we were doing business, if there was a warranty question, they handled it personally. I mean, that. So when you're talking about what's a fundamental key to a young chef or to any chef, it's having a great knife that'll hold a great edge. It'll do it. And again, I'm, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not being paid for this. Trust me. I don't know why this is sounding like an infomercial. I think you guys are setting me up with these guys.
From a weird standpoint, Chef, it's a question that I just, you know, from a gentleman of your stature and what you do and all of your restaurants and your experience,
man. Don't use words like gentleman and stature. That's way out.
I can't help it. So, you're right. From a dude like you who's been in the business for as long and you know, you have the restaurants that you have and you've done the business that you've done. And again, like I said, brother, this show is about the chefs. It's about the culinary. It's about the cook. It's about the food. I think that the talent coming out now that we have access to bring with us to work for us, is much different than it was from 10, 15 years ago. Have you seen that at all in the restaurants or just, you know, even going out and around the country? I mean, you go everywhere.
The culinary talent or the...
Yes, sir. Like the culinary talent, like the talent. The guys working in kitchens, you know, the chefs, the cooks, everybody else. Is it a different... Please.
It's night and day. I mean, well, I shouldn't say it's night and day. No, I would say it's vastly different. Mm-hmm. I mean, first I'll just start with the education of the consumer. You know, the guests. You know, guests that have been going to, that have been eating fine dining and have had a chance to try the world and have the, you know, the income and the opportunity to experience all the great foods from all the great chefs, I think, you know, have had an opportunity to really understand things and get a chance to develop their, you know, their palate. Not everybody's had that, but as this food revolution has been happening in this last 15 years, and I'll credit a tremendous amount of that to the Food Network in particular, consumers become educated. So maybe somebody hasn't had a chance to go eat that particular style of food or that particular chef or in that particular city. They started to learn about it. And then when they venture out and they go on vacation, they, you know, maybe they make that a quest. You know, I know they do it for Triple D as they go and try these funky joints that I go to. So in general, I think that everybody's got a much greater perspective and eye on the ball when it comes to great food. Now, on top of it, you take a bunch of these young folks and old folks and anybody that's, you know, looking for a career in the industry, and they go off to culinary school and they get a really good opportunity to understand the various facets of the business. That's, and I say to understand, to get a beginning in them, because truly the, you know, the expertise in it or the development is time, you know, time and experience, sure. You know, is always going to prevail. And so do I see great things? Oh yeah. I mean, I'd love to see how many Whole Foods are opening. I don't, I mean, the Whole Foods is, you know, it's expensive for most folks, but I love the fact that organics are becoming so readily available and people are talking about farm to table and people are starting to look at, you know, how, where did their food come from? And people are starting to get into this antibiotic or hormone free air chilled chicken, you know, and you start to see all this happening. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's alive and well, and sometimes it's overdone in some directions, in some ways, in other ways. But I think for the overall, no, we haven't been in this good of a position in decades. I mean, this is really a bright time for us, and I'm happy to see that you can walk into a Whole Foods. I just went to the gym and went to Whole Foods this morning and got a beet juice, you know. And where could you tell anybody 10 years ago, unless you were in a really organic you know, food-centric city, you know, like a metro, and be able to get a juice like that, you know, that was made right in front of you, that's not pasteurized, you know, that kind of stuff. So, it's happening. It's a big change and much needed.
I feel like everything's different now. Guy Fieri just told me he's drinking beet juice. I think the world just changed for me. Everything's different. Like, I don't know if everything's the same anymore.
Unfortunately, most people only know me from Triple D. I mean, Scott and Mike know me and know who I am and have been to my house. And I mean, I'm a very, we have a two huge organic gardens. We buy and, you know, we shop organic. I mean, I'm a veggie junkie like you've never, I mean, I've got on the cutting board right now, onions, carrots, red bells, asparagus, artichokes, green onions, and celery all ready to go into this, pho/ramen that I'm making. So, and we love, I mean, that's what my family, you know, we all crave veggies. And of course there's a little chicken in there for Ryder, but, no, you know, people always want to think that I'm a diet of chili dogs and pizza nachos. And, you know, those are always nice once in a while, but no, it's, I'm a veggie junkie.
Well, dude, it brings up a good point. Something that, you know, from a gentleman like you, I mean, from a guy like you, I mean, dude, you're everywhere. You go all over the place. I mean, tell me, what's more important, chef? Is buying local more important, or is it more important to get that organic tag on your food? What do you think matters more?
Well, I think I wouldn't even say it's buying local or does it have an organic tag, because typically if you're buying local, you are buying organic. I mean, that is most of these folks that are going to the time and trouble to make organic food, to grow organic food, are also taking the time, or to grow food, are taking the time to do it organically. I mean, we just built a new garden up on our ranch. It's a 1 acre garden. We did 42 fruit trees and we did 20 planter boxes that are 20 feet long by 5 feet wide, and at raised beds. And we took all the time and energy to build the soil, to really take the time to put the irrigation in correctly, to do all these factors, so, and to go ahead and put the right plants and the right fencing and everything, so we can do this right and do this and grow organic. And yes, you don't get the yield, and yes, you do have loss, and yes, you do have bugs, and that's all the natural process is supposed to be happening. So back to the question, what would I rather have? Well, I think that they're hand in hand. I think that when you're buying local, you are buying organic. my thing is if you're not having the opportunity to buy local, if you're in a big city, is to buy seasonally. You know, that's one of the things we have to remember is that, you know, we all love to have what we want to have when we want to have it. But the truth of it is if you're not buying it in season in the area that you're in, most likely it's coming from somewhere else. And now we're getting into this carbon footprint piece. So, you know, right. There's a lot of discussion and a lot of opinions that go on with it. I always just say this, take care of yourself, eat good food, eat it in moderation. You know, that's the other thing. I'm not saying don't eat food that you love. I'm not saying don't eat pizza. I'm just saying eat pizza in moderation. And if you're going to eat pizza, eat really goddamn great pizza. You know, don't eat crap frozen cardboard pizza. You know, so no. It's moderation. My mom's the example. My mom's 71 years old, rides her cycle bike 150 miles a week and eats and drinks whatever she wants. And she's a tiny little thing. And she just says, you know, people ask her all the time, how do you do it? She says, moderation.
Moderation. Man, I tell you what, some wise words there from the man himself, Guy Fieri. Guys, what a great, I mean, just a great time on this program. I really appreciate all the support that we get here. Big shout out to Dave for joining me. We had his phone drop out on him, but we'll get him back here soon enough. Hey, next week, season 6 kicks off. We are going to be live from Boston. You got to check it out. It's going to be a great event. Rooftop Chefs, I'll be there. Chef Nick Calais will be there. And, of course, Dave will be down there with me doing some stuff. We're going to broadcast live 2-hour Chef-tacular from the roof of the Hotel Colonnade. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. We're probably going to switch platforms, too. I think we're moving over to Spreaker. We'll have a lot more information on that here coming up on the social media. But, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, in the meantime and in between time, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Season 6 starts next week. I'll see you guys soon. Take care. Peace!
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I came to play.